Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, live from Bonn in Germany. This is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo. Coming up, the European Union Observer Mission in Guinea says Sunday's presidential poll was valid.
I had the impression that the process that we could witness in the polling stations was fair. I had the impression that people went to vote having decided for themselves who to vote for, and in that sense I would also say that these elections were free.
And a group of young Germans are playing football with African migrants to help them get to know German society.
They are encouraged to go out and to meet people and to talk to German people, and of course they have to be integrated in German society, and I think this is a good way.
These stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The European Union Observer Mission in Guinea has commended voters for their enthusiasm and peaceful conduct during the presidential elections last Sunday. The mission also called for transparency as the Electoral Commission finalizes the results of the poll. It said there had been logistical and practical difficulties during the vote, but they had not marred its validity. Mark Caldwell has been speaking to Karim Kamara, a journalist in the capital, Conakry, about what made observers so sure that the election was valid despite the difficulties.
Well, if I may cut straight, the EU and observer mission delegation boss, and who is Frank Angel, he said that a lot of Guineans took part in the election, and then the turnout was very, very massive. And then he said that the voting also was also done in a peaceful manner. So therefore, he has no reason to say that the election and wasn't free and fair.
I had the impression that the process that we could witness in the polling stations was fair. I had the impression that people went to vote having decided for themselves who to vote for, and in that sense I would also say that these elections were free.
But there were problems, were there not?
Yes, yeah, however, yes, he noted out problems, and then we said there was a lot of duplication of names on the electoral list, and then in certain areas also pulling and presiding agents were having difficulties to even have registers in their hands. So all this and helped to hinder the smooth process of the elections. But he said, however, that this could not be a cause for an annulment of the polls.
How have people in Conakry been reacting to the findings by the European Union mission?
Lot of people here, lot of Guineans here, look, they want peace. They are preaching peace. They say, look, the election result must be accepted. And whosoever wins, I think that person must be accepted, because all of them are Guineans and they are all fighting for the betterment of this country. So, and then accept. And then in the opposition areas we are in, they are not satisfied. And then even as we speak, in the opposition stronghold of Bambeto, Amdalai and Koza, the youth have taken to the street to cut off the road by sending stones at police, and then police are also running after them. So it's like stone running battle between the police and the youth.
So in other words, there has been violence.
Yes, indeed, yes. This afternoon, yes, violence automatically resumed along the Bambeto Amdalai Highway, and lot of vehicles have just diverted to other areas and leaving that particular area for fear that they might be attacked by this angry youth.
Is that violence likely to spread, or do the authorities have it under control?
Well, the security forces have been deployed in the area, but we don't know yet what will happen and afterwards, because the European Union and the African Union, ECOWAS, are all preaching peace, and the European Union anytime from now will be holding consultations with the seven presidential candidates and asking them to either accept the result or take their matters to the Constitutional Court.
When can we expect the results?
We're not expecting final result for the time being, but we're expecting preliminary results will be coming out and within a week. That is either from the 15th or from the 14th of October. And after which the Constitutional Court has the full right publish the official and the final result of the presidential elections.
Karim Kamara in Conakry. So election observers have reported that the election was valid despite logistical and organizational challenges. Having heard this, why then did opposition denounce the results of the poll as fraudulent even before they had been announced? Mark Caldwell put that question to Paul Melly, who is Associate Fellow with the Africa Programme at Chatham House in the UK.
I think there are two reasons. One is Guinea's history, actually. This is only the second presidential election of a proper democratic kind. Until 2009, 2010, Guinea was a dictatorship and had endured more than five decades of authoritarian rule. Where elections took place, they were totally manipulated. There wasn't really much real freedom at all, or freedom of political choice. So it's a very slow process, building any kind of trust in the institutions, especially because President Condé himself tends to have a slightly high-handed style. And so the opposition tend to feel that although he was elected in 2010, his approach, his mindset, is still not a very pluralistic or compromising one. I think there's also a second practical reason, which is just that after all that long history, it does take a very long time to build an electoral system that does function properly. And although observers, of course, can monitor the immediate run-up to the poll, the actual technical conduct of the voting, much of the wider influence on an election takes place much earlier.
What impact are these comments by the election observers likely to have on the election? After all, it's not over yet. There could be a second round.
I think they'll have a dual impact. One is that it will put pressure on the opposition to stay involved. So if there is a second round, it will be more difficult for the leading opposition candidate to boycott. They will know that they don't have the support of the international community if they do boycott a second round runoff contest against President Condé.
How likely is a second round?
It's quite finely balanced, and it's very hard to read the political situation at the moment. In the previous election, it was pretty clear that Selim Dalein Diallo, the leader of the UFDG opposition party, was the leading opposition challenger, and that Alpha Condé was the other leading contender. But this time, the picture is being complicated, not so much on the government side, but on the opposition side. Sidya Touré, who's the leader of the UFR, the third largest party in Guinea, and one of the strongest opposition parties in Conakry and coastal regions, has broken his alliance with Selou Dalein Diallo. So we're not quite sure how Sidya Touré's voters will vote if there is a second round, whether they still will support Diallo. Meanwhile, Diallo himself has formed a very unlikely election alliance with the supporters of Moussa Dadis Camara, a former military ruler who's still in exile in Burkina Faso and faces the risk of being prosecuted for major human rights violations during his time in power in 2009. And among those violations, his soldiers carried out a massacre at a stadium where more than 150 opposition supporters, most of them Diallo supporters, were killed. So in that context, that alliance between Diallo and the Dadis Camara camp looks very strange. That may also alienate some people who would otherwise vote for the opposition, but bring in some different voters. So in that climate, it's very, very hard to predict quite how things will pan out.
Paul Melly, Associate Fellow with the Africa Programme at Chatham House in the UK.
News, analysis and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Uganda has begun withdrawing its troops from South Sudan. The government in Kampala sent soldiers into its neighbor in late 2013 to prop up the government of President Salva Kiir. Kiir was embroiled in clashes with forces loyal to sacked Vice President Riek Machar. The removal of foreign troops was part of a peace deal between the warring factions, which was brokered by regional mediators and signed in August of this year. From Kampala, Alex Jita reports.
The main objective of Uganda's army was to evacuate stranded Ugandans doing business in different provinces of South Sudan. But days later, after their deployment, their mission unexpectedly changed to a more active role of peacekeeping. They also started safeguarding key government installations. One of their key roles was recapturing the airport that had been overrun by the rebels to allow normal flights to resume and to open a route for relief aid to come in. Uganda's Chief of Defense Forces, General Katumba Wamala, believes that his troops did a commendable job.
We should be out of South Sudan by the first week of November. It's not just a question of running away. It's a matter of organized withdrawal. We have had a very, very good relationship with the South Sudan community, and we have not had even some of those actions which normally put a blot on the names of foreign forces and countries.
The deployment of UPDF was not welcomed by many Ugandans, including politicians. Many felt Uganda already had thousands of troops in Somalia and that this was endangering its own home security. Some believe it was a good thing to evacuate people in danger, but others believe that such deployments in the future should be better managed.
I wouldn't expect anybody to oppose that we should rescue people who are stranded at the neighborhood for as long as we are following the established procedures on how forces go to other countries.
We are not going to give President Museveni and the UPDF and government what we would call an open check. No, the permission, the approval should be conditioned so that Ugandans can monitor the deployment of the troops.
But the South Sudan community in Kampala was happy that Uganda had decided to take an active role in ensuring security in Africa's youngest nation. Professor Ogenga Latigo, a political analyst, says that the UPDF withdrawal is going to give a positive sign out to the peace talks between South Sudan President Salva Kiir's government and his former deputy Riek Machar.
South Sudan would not settle down as long as one side believes that they have an extra arm to help them from outside Sudan. So now that they know they have to deal with their own people, I'm sure they will have to sit down and say, wait a minute. I think we have had enough of this nonsense. Let us see how we can move together. Let Uganda get out and let South Sudan solve their problems themselves.
It should be recalled that Uganda has a strong business interest in South Sudan. A large Ugandan business community is now operating in the country. After getting independence, South Sudan became one of the most popular export markets for most goods and services produced from Uganda. Therefore, the decision to promptly deploy was driven by more than political reasons.
Alex Jita reporting.
Behind the headlines.
A record number of migrants, many of them fleeing conflict in the Middle East, are arriving here in Germany. And the government in Berlin expects a total number of 800,000 new arrivals this year. That figure could rise, though. Now, for those new arrivals, Germany can be a bewildering place and integration into German society difficult. In Cologne, a group of young Germans are trying to help by inviting young Africans to play football with them. It is a simple idea, but apparently an effective one, as I found out. Football is a universal language, says it fans. On this pitch in the German city of Cologne, a wide variety of African languages can also be heard. Refugees Welcome is an initiative founded by private German citizens to hold out a helping hand to millions of people fleeing conflict in countries such as Syria and Afghanistan. Since it started in early September, Africans seeking asylum in Germany are also benefiting from it. Young Germans in Cologne started an open football club to give African asylum seekers a platform to meet and interact with the locals.
Alles klar? Ja. Nehmen Sie ruhig ein gelbes Leibchen und wir müssen wechseln, okay? Okay. You have to change the code. 5 to 5.
Frank Strasburger is one of the local residents who started the program.
It's very important for me because I love football and I play football all my life, not in a club. In former times I did, but like hobby, I love it. And I love to communicate with them, and it's fun to do it every week. And you know, you learn a lot, you laugh a lot, and you get to know their problems and you can help sometimes.
Strasburger does much more than playing football with these young Africans. He also takes them out to familiarize them with life in a German city.
They are encouraged to go out and to meet people and to talk to German people. And of course, they have to be integrated in German society. And I think this is a good way.
You must wechseln, ne? Am besten bleibst du hier draußen und ihr wechselst. You have to change on your own, but now you're 6.
Language can be a major barrier in this cultural exchange program. Simon Knappe, a Cologne resident, tells me.
Not everyone who speaks the same English or French or Pidgin Creole, whatever, or German. And so sometimes it's difficult to understand each other on a big field.
Can you tell me your name?
Yeah, my name is Prince. I'm from Ghana.
Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm Gilbert from Ghana.
Gilbert from Ghana?
Yeah.
Augustine from Ghana. Yeah.
Also from Ghana?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mulgita.
Mulgita from
Eritrea.
Yeah. Nice. So how important is it for you guys to actually just meet here and just play football?
All of us, we are in one house, and we have our coach here, so he told us to come to training every Wednesday, yeah. So those who we don't have anything to do, so we must to try to come training and play football.
Does that help you to speak German by interacting with these guys?
Yeah, it helps a lot. Being together with them, they can teach you some one-to-one-to. You can know maybe how are you doing and those stuff. You can study something from them.
After the game, I accompany 28-year-old Prince to his new home. He tells me how he finds life in Germany.
It's not easy. Like a young guy like me, I'm still inside house every day and just eat and sleep, going around with my friends, playing, laughing.
Prince arrives at the facility where he has been living since he came to Germany from Italy a year ago. His apartment is a 15 square meter bedroom that he shares with three others. They spend most of their time playing card games. Germany does not allow refugees seeking asylum to work until their asylum is approved. That approval can take years. One of Prince's roommates, who goes by the name of Napoleon, tells me his impression of Germany is completely different from what he'd seen on television.
Way back in my country, when we are in my country, I used to sit down and watch GW, see the nice place of German, or see how they behave. The other side of the world is so nice. That is what I think. So, but when I step into country, it is like 2.5 years. The story that I have occupied is the same, like we are the same people, but I never heard a story I watch on the TV.
Prince is happy he made a difficult journey across the Sahara Desert and the Mediterranean Sea. But that's the journey he does not recommend others to follow.
It's not me that I'm saying, because I'm already here, so I don't want anybody to come. But it's so dangerous. When you are coming, you must set it in your mind, whether to live or die. Because the journey you are took it be like war. You can meet a rebels in desert. They can collect your money, collect your water, and kill everybody.
These young Africans have risked so much to come to Germany, only to discover that sitting and waiting in a small apartment is just the next of several steps towards, perhaps, finally living the life of their dreams.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter. dw.com/AfricaLink.
Calamitous famines, those that kill a million or more, appear to have vanished from the planet. Hunger levels are declining, but nonetheless, more than 750 million people still don't get enough to eat. The 2015 Global Hunger Index, published this week, said those worst affected by hunger live in Chad, Central African Republic, or Zambia. The last one raged in Ethiopia between 1983 and 1985. More than 30 years later, water management in that country's Ansokia Valley is much better than it used to be. This report by Linda Staude is read now by Sarah Stefan.
A thick stream of water shoots out of a sawn-off pipe from a huge reservoir. It lands into a shallow trench that meanders for hundreds of meters through gently rolling hills into Ethiopia's fertile Ansokia Valley. Here and there, smaller trenches branch off to water orchards and vegetable plots, and at the foot of the hills, a large field that is ready for the sowing of grain.
It's our livelihood. Fruit and vegetables provide food and pay for our clothes, school fees, everything. I only have a small grain field, so we depend on the fruit and vegetables.
Farmer Atu Aspao walks proudly through his fruit grove. Mango and orange trees are heavy with fruit. The harvest will be enough to sell a share, even now at the height of the dry season.
For all this, we don't need any rain. This is spring water from the reservoirs.
They were built around 30 years ago, right after the catastrophic droughts that transformed the Ansokia Valley into an eroded, dusty desert.
When there was massive famine there, where 15 to 20 people die every day. So they develop trust in World Vision. So, you know, whenever we come with new initiatives, it's not difficult for them to accept, learn, work with us.
Says Eleni Mergia from the aid organization World Vision, which built the reservoir and has since trained farmers in the valley with funds from Germany and the United States. They learn better building techniques and fair distribution of the precious water.
Before, the strong took the water, the weak got none. Today, we have a cooperative. Water is shared according to need. That's fair. And when someone steals more water, they must pay a penalty of 1,000 birr.
Explains Tasvar Balaccio, head of the cooperative in the small village of Gemza. Together, the farmers can get a better price for the harvest and cheaper seed, fertilizer and pesticides. The cooperative was founded 10 years ago at the government's suggestion. The country has been working closely with international aid organizations to prevent another famine like the one that happened 30 years ago and to improve the lives of the rural poor. This has worked, says Farmer Aspao.
It has changed so much, starting with good drinking water. Before, we drank dirty water. People got diarrhea and many died. Now there is a health system. The children go to school. We live like people again.
That report was written by Linda Staude.
Opinion.
Let's return now to our top story. The first round of the presidential elections in Guinea. Observers from the EU and the African Union gave them a clean bill of health on Tuesday despite organizational or logistical difficulties. Yet, one day earlier, the opposition had claimed that they were fraudulent. What do you make of this turn of events in Guinea? How hopeful are you that those elections will represent the will of the people? Let us know your thoughts in a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or in an SMS to country code 49160957595110. And don't forget, we will be reading from your comment in your say this coming Friday here on AfricaLink. And before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. European Union observers have said that Guinea's presidential election was valid despite some logistical difficulties. Uganda has started pulling its troops out of South Sudan. And we have also been hearing how a group of young Germans in Cologne are helping African migrants to familiarize themselves with German society. There we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. As always, thank you for listening. This is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany.